New problems in the BMV. Why some motorists are being told to give back tax refunds. Immigration in Indiana. How the president's order will affect tens of thousands of immigrants here. The editorial cartoon that sparked a national debate. A Supreme Court battle over public school busing. And a call to hold the line on charter schools. That plus honors for Lauryn Hill and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 28, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the Indiana Bureau of Motor Vehicles is once again dealing with an accounting mistake. The BMV mistakenly overpaid 254 drivers a total of $60,000 in refunds. That averages out to about $236 each to drivers who were initially overcharged when they registered their cars. That error, totaling $29 million, was announced back in September. Irwin Levin, an attorney who represents people suing the BMV, says it's just another chapter in the agency's story of incompetence.
It is sad, but we shouldn't be surprised by this. What is more significant is that the BMV continues to hide behind a veil of secrecy.
What will it take to straighten out the BMV? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is this a serious problem?
I think it's a serious problem, certainly. I mean, you overcharge by $29 million, and then you give it back and you make another mistake. I mean, I know the governor's called for an audit. I think Representative Forrestal stepping up and calling attention to that audit and making certain that people are watching.
And apparently there's a Board of Accounts audit underway
well. That's good, but maybe an outside audit would be a good idea as well, because these mistakes are happening with too much regularity, and it is disconcerting because we're talking about millions of dollars of mistakes here.
But this mistake is just $60,000.
Only $60,000. Is that a rounding error in your checking account?
No. The BMV response is that it was human error that's been corrected and that it applied to only 0.002% of
the... That's correct.
Is that excusable?
Yeah. And after $29 million problem and you make the correction and you're off by 0.002, which means they're more than 99% accurate in what they did in correcting the problem. So $60,000 to 264 people statewide is nothing, okay? And sure, they need to have the audit that they're in the process of doing. They hired a company that's been on theirs for 6 months. They're already working on it. There's an independent audit on the way. And so they're working through these problems. So in the big scheme of things, after a $29 million mistake, to be off $60,000 on the refund is nothing.
Okay, so how about the way
they
handled it? These people got a letter saying, if you haven't cashed the check, don't cash it. If you have cashed it, find some money and send it back. Is that the way to handle this?
Certainly, there would have been, I think, a better way to do this, especially given that this is unfolding against the backdrop of these earlier errors that you alluded to. This is not an isolated incident. Now, granted, the factors are different. This was not a programming error. This was not some problem with the software or the algorithms, or somebody messed up. But still, it's part of a series of mess-ups, and so you would think that there might be a heightened sensitivity to that. And I'm not sure the whole 99% thing works. I mean, tell the next time you need a driving test and you tell the examiner, but I came to a 99% stop there at the before turning.
you passed with 99% of the driver's test, by the way.
Yeah. Well, let's shoot for 100%. It's, I think the one thing the BMV has going for it here is that there has been fundamental systemic improvement in what the public perceives to be, you know, most of us intersect with the Bureau of Motor Vehicles when we go in and wait in line to get a driver's license or renewal. And it used to be, you know, well, what, an hour-long proposition or more? It's not anymore. So now, at least there is some sense that there was, you know, if this had still been that day and you had these errors, I think you would have had a much bigger uproar.
You're saying they have some reserve goodwill they can rely on.
I think they're burning through it if they aren't careful. I think that's the risk that they run here. And I'll agree, Mike, that $60,000 in the great scheme of things when you're talking about $29 million is not that much money. But to the people who got the money and thinking that it was theirs to get, if it's not that much money, then just write it off. Say, look, we made a mistake again. We've corrected that mistake. Let's just write off the mistake and move forward from here. Because 100% is really what we need to be going for here. You know, you're talking about the public's trust. You're talking about a transaction that needs to be 100% correct. If they're off by point whatever that was, whatever small fraction that was, then just write it off and say, you know, we won't make that mistake again.
You know, there's another alternative, too. They could always return the license branches to the political parties and see if they couldn't do better.
I don't think that's going to happen. How you'd like to see the Republicans running the license branches right now?
Why I'm not? Just saying, you know, I have a little knowledge of that issue, and
I'm trying to do the calculus here. You let the Republicans run it, leads to some scandals, and that puts the Democrats back in power.
And now you have scandals. Republicans in power.
That's a board right there.
Boy, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, can the BMV be fixed? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, only temporarily. Last week's question was, should the state school superintendent be elected or appointed? 81% said elected, 9% said appointed, 10% said appointed, but not until 2020. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The president's executive order protecting illegal immigrants from deportation will affect tens of thousands of people in Indiana. Mexican Consul Jorge Sanchez announced this week that he has already expanded his staff to accommodate an expected rush of immigrants seeking new status. He says as many as 75,000 immigrants in Indiana could be affected. Here is interpreter Brianna Rodriguez.
Mexican consulates will implement the necessary measures to issue documents with the goal of benefiting the highest number of Mexicans possible, taking into consideration exceptional cases.
Mike McDaniel, does that number surprise you, up to 75,000?
Yeah, the estimates have been anywhere between 75,000 and 110,000. I've seen that number also thrown out there. It does surprise me a little bit, but, you know, this problem has been festering for so long, and the president clearly, in the minds of both of our senators, both of them think he overstepped his bounds by doing what he did. And, you know, a lot of people in the public agree with that, that he did. But he did what he did. I mean, we're going to have to live with those circumstances based on what he did. And I think that you're going to see Congress deal with this issue in a hurry. I think they have a responsibility to do that. And I think before even the next term starts, you're going to see them start having committee hearings on this thing. And I think eventually you will see a bill sometime early next year, early to mid next year. But the committee process needs to work, and you need to go through this stuff. But, you know, it is what it is, and we got to deal with what we've got, you know.
Congressman Luke Messer is worried about the people who are protected from deportation will be eligible for federal aid.
Look, if Congress had passed the bipartisan bill that passed the Senate last year, this problem could have been avoided. They can still avoid it. They can walk in there and they can do what people elected them to do, which is their job. There's a time lag between the time the president announced this and it goes into effect. If they want to get up off their whatevers and do what they're supposed to do and pass a decent bipartisan piece of legislation, the problem goes away.
I'm not sure that a lot of people watching this go on realize just how much of a local issue it is.
Well, that's true.
It is a local issue because in every one of our communities, there are people who are living with the specter of having to live in an illegal situation. And that's why I agree 100% with what Ann is saying, is that Congress needs to deal with this. Do we think seriously that Congress would even think about doing this if the president hadn't done what he'd done?
No.
Agree or disagree with the president on this point, at least he's got them moving in a direction that will lead to, hopefully, some kind of public policy that will deal this, because it is an issue in every town in Indiana and across the country. It's an important issue that needs to be dealt with.
Of course, he could have done this earlier, too. He waited until after the election to do this. Well, Why do you think that is?
Well, they didn't pass it for a year and a half, Mike.
Right. I'm saying he could have done this a year and a half ago if he wanted to.
There are some political elements here.
Absolutely political elements. But I would caution that there, while certainly there's a temptation to paint this as a Republican versus Democratic issue, really there are divisions, and we're going to see that here as this plays out, within both parties. And you... It depends on where what constituencies people have in the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, how amenable they've been to this in the past. You've seen a lot of very high-profile Republicans who have embraced this kind of legislation. I mean, Richard Lugar, and I think he is generally highly regarded in those circles, was one of the major backers of the DREAM Act a few years ago.
Right.
John McCain has put his name in the past on legislation of this sort. So, the division, it's not just an R&D issue.
It's factions
within the Republican Party.
It can't be an R&D factor when you have families torn apart, when you have children who are citizens being deprived of their parents. You cannot have it as an R&D issue. But you've got to have the political courage to step up and do something, and that's what the House was elected to do, and they need to do
something. One thing is, it's a fear issue. People use this and do see it as a certain wedge issue because of the fear that be.
One thing there is agreement on, though, now is that you do have to secure the border before you do anything else.
Well,
they've not done that yet.
That's part of his executive order as well, however.
Right.
Well, that was also part of the legislation
that
stalled in the House.
The House didn't pass, yes.
Meantime, an editorial cartoon by Indianapolis Star cartoonist Gary Varvel sparked a national debate this week. It shows an immigrant family showing up for Thanksgiving dinner. Online comments called it racist, and the Star changed it to remove a mustache from one of the immigrants. The newspaper later deleted it from its website after it drew national notice. That's not enough for local businesswoman Veronica Guerrero.
I'm really upset, and the Latino community is very upset too.
The executive editor posted an apology of sorts. We erred in publishing it, said Jeff Taylor. The depictions in this case were inappropriate. That's not enough for Guerrero either.
And we are planning to boycott Indy Star. We're working on it.
Who?
A group of Latinos organizations.
John Ketzenberger, was the reaction to that cartoon warranted?
I think so. I think you can understand Ms. Guerrero's frustration with the cartoon and the depiction in it. And I think that the decision to take the cartoon down is an admission that it was a bad choice and poor decision to publish it.
But who handled this more poorly? Varvel, who, by the way, I have a lot of respect for, or the Star, who first made a change, then took it down, then made a statement that was kind of soft?
I'm not going to fault. I mean, as I've always been something of a First Amendment absolutist, and I find it would be very awkward for me to suggest that of all people, a political cartoonist should be held in check, because one of the things that political cartoons certainly are intended to do is provoke thought and debate. And this did that. I would say that the bigger fumble here was by the management of the newspaper, which seemed to think that minor revisions such as this mustache erasure would solve the problem. And then the removal of the first of all,
you can't take
thing,
it back.
You don't take anything back in the internet age.
You can't take it back.
It just doesn't work. So to me, there were a couple opportunities to where this could have gone wrong, and they found that exit ramp every single time.
Varvel, not Varvel, the editor, Jeff Taylor, made the case that this represented the viewpoint of a lot of conservatives. Is that accurate?
Well, look, I think I know what Gary Varvel was trying to do with the cartoon, and I agree with John Schwanis that the purpose of a political cartoon is to stimulate debate. And Gary Varvel has been at the Indianapolis papers, both papers now, I guess, over the course of almost 30 years. And you're never going to go that long in that business without making somebody angry about something you do at some point. And he did that with this. It probably could have been depicted in a different way than he did to make the point that he was trying to make. But the Indianapolis Star clearly fumbled this by trying to alter the cartoon. If it was such a bad deal, you shouldn't have published in the first place.
All it did was point up the error.
Well, sure. All I did was add to the fuel to the fire. And it was just, and they probably, at the end of the day, probably think that because it generated this kind of discussion that they were the winners in this. It's your classic, just spell my name right kind of stuff. If that's the case, then they're really doing it wrong.
Yeah, I agree. It's clearly the Star's fumble. And they handled about as poorly as they could. And when they finally took it off, they had one of these classic non-apology apologies. You know, they just sort of said, sorry, and we are disturbed that we offended people, and we apologize. That would have been fine.
Moving on, one mom's fight for free school transportation went before the Indiana Supreme Court this week. Because of money problems, Franklin Township stopped offering free transportation to its students during the 2011-2012 school year. Instead, an outside contractor charged for the service. Laura Hoagland sued the district, saying it was unconstitutional. Attorney Sam Lauren argued for the school district.
The Indiana legislature has determined that school corporations may but are not required to bus all students.
Not only may schools not charge a fee for busing and transportation of public school students, but they also may not discontinue it entirely without violating the mandates of the Indiana Constitution.
And that's Hoagland's attorney, Ian Thompson. John Schwanis, what's writing on this case, so to speak?
Not students.
Well, there's a fairly broad issue here about what elements of public school are free and should be free. We've had debates about textbook rental. I mean, those of us who grew up, Indianapolis public schools, K through 8, I remember, textbook rentals. So should public school students get free textbooks? Now the debate moves into another realm, equally important perhaps. If you can't get to school on a regular basis, what good is the public education? So where are the lines? Now, granted, this litigation has moved through, you've had the enactment of various laws that sort of have changed the landscape.
One of the things it points out is a lack of school funding.
That's the property tax cap.
That's where we're getting to right now. Is this is one of the consequences of saying that property taxes, when it comes especially to schools, is a function of you have a different function now. You do not use the property taxes in the same way that you did, and you have far less access to them if you're a school district. So now you have to go to the voters and say, well, if we want to be able to continue to do this bus service, we have to pay for it, and in order to pay for it, we have to pass a referendum to get the okay to do this outside of the caps. And the problem is that that's a hard sell. I think it is a constitutional question, but the practical upshot is they don't have the money in many of these cases in order to provide it unless they make cuts in some other program.
Well, or is it a question of administration? Can they find ways to pay for it?
Well, I'm sure they can find ways to pay for it. They can lay off teachers. They can stop extracurricular activities. They can stop heating or cooling the building. They certainly can find ways to do it. The question is there enough money under the property tax caps to do what they ought to be doing in providing the services necessary to completely educate the child? And what we're going to see more of this in the future. We're not going to see less of it.
And will we see the legislature respond?
Oh, I think so. I think in this case, Franklin Township was kind of the poster child or poster township school system for everything that was supposed to be wrong with building Taj Mahal athletic facilities. Yeah. And, I mean, they've got some football facilities out there that a lot of colleges would envy.
Too.
Yeah.
And industrial
And now
base.
When you're going back and saying, we don't have money to transport kids to school,
there's
a disconnect there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're dealing with here, and public opinion is not going to be on their side, and I can't imagine legislators are going to defend this in any way, shape, or form.
But I think
you can't charge people to, you know, drive the kids to school. I mean, this
you can't,
not going to
work. You can't tear down the football stadium.
Well,
either.
No, but I'm
it
just
get
saying,
you the
you're
money
talking
either.
About a township that voted to do all those things,
right?
But now they're saying they don't have enough money to take kids to school.
That's
going to
happen with other townships because you're hearing Brian Bosma saying there needs to be.
I'm just telling you, that's where it started.
I understand, but you're saying hearing Brian Bosma say the same thing. There has to be a reallocation of that money for school systems like Zionsville, who did the same thing with no industrial base.
And they're all saying that they're going to add money to education this time, to the base of education.
Well, that would be great if they could get it up to where it was in 2008. It would be really nice.
And it's already necessarily addressed the transportation funds. I mean, those are two different animals, right?
They are two different animals.
So, unanswered question.
A state lawmaker says Indiana should stop approving new charter schools until it determines why increasing numbers of them are failing. Democrat Greg Porter of Indianapolis told the Indianapolis Business Journal that he's alarmed by the increasing number of charter schools receiving D or F grades, more than half the charter schools in Marion County and up from 30% 2 years ago. Porter wants a moratorium on new charters so legislators and educators can reevaluate the system. Mike McDaniel, will Greg Porter get his way?
I talked to Greg Porter today about this issue at some length. And, of course, Greg was one of the original sponsors of the charter school legislation with Teresa Leppers when she was in the state senate. And so here's a guy who's sincere about his caring about education generally in the state of Indiana. I don't think he'll get a moratorium. I do think that you're going to see more evaluation of them. But the thing to remember here, and the reason I don't think you'll get a moratorium, is that the percentage of D and F schools and traditional schools are higher than the percentage of charter schools that have D's and F's. So still, I mean, there's a long way to go. And still parents have a choice because the money does follow the student in Indiana where they didn't have those choices before. So, yeah, I don't think you'll get a moratorium. But I do think you're going to get some real evaluation about who authorizes them and how you go about doing that and what that means.
Yeah, and how well they're managed and overseen. I mean, there's a problem, isn't there, with the grading system as well?
Well, there are several problems here, and I think Representative Porter has it exactly right. He introduced legislation to the effect of holding the line on this till we find out whether this idea that was supposed to be the silver bullet to solve all education problems is doing that. And when you have so many authorizing agencies, groups or schools that are failing, shop for their supervisor. If they fail with one, they go get somebody else to do it. That's why we need to stop this and look and see whether it's working. If it's working,
it does work.
If it's working, and you restrict the number of entities that can grant it so we don't do this forum shopping, then okay. But if not, then we need to pull back. And Greg Porter's completely right about it.
Well, what we're learning is it works in some cases and not in others.
Well, I think that's true. And I think Ann's hit on a point, though, that charter schools were viewed widely when they were first enacted as a way to really help solve the problem and make all schools better or at least improve education overall. And what we're seeing is that in reality, they have a lot of the same problems that regular schools do. So I think that it is time to evaluate the system. It's been around long enough, and I do think if there's a problem with forum shopping or something like that, then it needs to be addressed.
Well, the original idea, if you go back to 2001 in this case with the bill that Mike mentioned, you know, it was to bring market forces to bear so that people do have choices, and if you go to from a failing school to a better school, the notion is, well, that school is going to have to change or suffer the consequences. But market forces are not being allowed necessarily to come into play here because there aren't significant consequences or at least permanent consequences for failing charters. So in other words, you have half of the market forces at work, but then once you're a charter school, you seem to have something of an impunity or at least the opportunity to reinvent yourself.
They need to address it.
They do.
Finally, Lauren Hill defied the odds by playing in her second college basketball game for Mount St. Joseph College. Then she returned to her home in Dearborn County this week to cheer on the Lawrenceburg High Lady Tigers. At halftime, dozens of people came forward to honor Lauren, who is battling a rare form of brain cancer. The opposing team presented her with gifts, and Lawrenceburg's mayor gave Lauren a key to the city and declared Lauren Hill Week. The school retired her number 22 jersey.
I thought I was coming to watch my team play a game. That's been all. So all this has been amazing.
And Delaney, they've also raised $300,000 for cancer research.
It's a great story. I mean, she's obviously a profile in courage and deserves a tremendous amount of credit for persevering. And, you know, has to be a not only life-changing experience, but, I mean, facing what she faces at her age and being able to do what she does is a wonderful story.
And turning it into a national movement
is a great thing.
Yeah, that's Indiana.
Gives it meaning.
It's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.